Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We turn to the strategy of the game every Thursday to dig deep the trends and the analysis of Brenton Sanderson in our McCafe Coffee Catch-Up. Win free McCafe Coffee for a year on the My Macca's app. I feel like we should start with Rory Sloane.
I did have a chat to Sando. I can't even remember what year that was, but no, I kept in touch with Sando. He's a ripping coach. I enjoyed my time under Sando, and I do remember having a chat to him at one point, but as you guys probably know and the whole South Australia knows, I mean, I've loved this place ever since I've been here, and I've loved their footy club to the point I don't even know how I'll ever repay them for it, but I'll certainly try. And it'll start by just continuing on my merry way this year and training a little bit with some of the rehab boys and maybe helping the coaches out and sticking around where I can.
Rory Sloane, he wouldn't be dragged away to Collingwood. Hello to you, Sando.
G'day, Jared.
What was that conversation like?
He is a superstar player, but more importantly, he is an incredible person. I think every other club would have been trying to get him out of Adelaide every year. And I really enjoyed coaching him. He was such an easy player to coach. And yeah. When I ended up at Collingwood, Bucks, and even when I was not at Collingwood, even when I was at the Crows, Bucks would call me and say, do you reckon Rory Sloane would want to come back to Melbourne and play for the Pies? And I said, no, he's staying at the Crows. And then when I ended up at Collingwood, each year I would just check in and see if he was still happy and whether he would consider moving back to Melbourne and playing for Collingwood. But he's an absolute ripper, and he's got a long future still in the game. He's a footy person, and I'm sure he'll make a great coach as well.
So coaches do have favourites. Was he one of yours?
Yeah, he was, easily, yeah. And like, he's just a player that was easy to coach. And I think it was, I do know it was genuine with Sloaney. He would actually rock up. You know, like if I was coming to visit you, Jared, at your house, I would let you know. Like, I'd send you a message, or I'd give you a call and just say, I'm in the area, I'm dropping in. Sloaney is the sort of personality, the sort of person that would just drop into your house unannounced, knock on the door. G'day, Sloaney, how you going? What's up? No, nothing, mate. Just thought I'd just drop in. And he'd stay for an hour or an hour and a half or whatever and just have a chat, and then sort of off he'd go. But, yeah, incredibly likeable. And, if you ask any one of the players that he's played with, they would say that probably one of the best people that I've met in footy. Obviously wish him all the best with the rest of the community. I'm sure he's going to have a long career in coaching ahead of him.
And a beautiful farewell tonight. So it's a Crows home showdown.
Yep.
What an environment that will be to bow out.
Yeah, it'll be brilliant. It's going to be a great game tonight too. I think the Crows need to win and the Port need to bounce back, and it's going to be a really, really good game of footy tonight.
Do you think it's about time the showdown had the standalone prime time slot?
Yeah, I do. I do. However, in the same breath, you know, I'm a South Australian. I grew up in the Adelaide Hills. As soon as the Crows came in, and then obviously Port Adelaide after that, it was always going to be a rivalry that it didn't really matter what the rest of the country thought, that this was the focus in SA twice a year. And there's been some rippers. I've been on the receiving end of some losses when I was coaching Adelaide. You know, my least favourite memory was the Angus Monfries bounce when the Crows, we were leading at Footy Park. It was to the left of screen. And the Angus Monfries, it sort of bounced on the point line and then took a magical left-hand turn for a goal. I'll never forget that moment. And Port Adelaide got the win. And I actually said to Kenny Hinckley, so when Kenny got the job at Port and I was coaching Adelaide, I met him for a coffee and I said, I know we're good friends, Kenny, but we are arch enemies two weekends a year. We've got to really build this up about the hatred. And thankfully, it actually is real. Like the Port Adelaide and Adelaide fans really do not get on. And there are some families who have, you know, a Port fan and a Crows fan, and they, yeah, twice a year, it's the arch rivalry. It's fantastic. And tonight, I think you'll see that. I think you'll see a really physical game.
Yeah, I think they'll know that this is for the whole nation to observe as well. All right, a couple of thoughts from coaches during the week that piqued my interest to run past you on a strategy front. The first was Adam Kingsley with the age-old debate of winning versus entertaining.
I think the brand that we play stands up in finals. I think we probably saw that last year, even though it didn't take us to where ultimately we wanted to get to. I think it stands up. We play a finals brand, and it just so happens that it's fun to watch. If this the way that we wanted to play wasn't going to win, we wouldn't do it. Okay, so winning is the most important thing, and then being fun to watch is a close second.
A close second, but second. It's the philosophical struggle, isn't it?
Yeah, when I heard that and when I thought about it, I had to think about it for a while because I think he's right. I think he is right. In the modern game, obviously winning is paramount, but if you can't win, I think it's the responsibility of our coaches and our teams to entertain their fans. I really do. I think it's the way the game's going forward. So the exciting footy part and taking the game on, and I think you have to provide a game plan for your players too that they love playing. And I just think of this generation. They love to get out now and you know, the offense and the hard tackling. But I think it is an entertainment industry now as well. So, yeah, if people are paying great money, big money, to go and to watch their team, regardless of the score, I know they want to win, but I think entertainment is a very close second. So, yeah, I think Adam Kingsley is spot on with that comment.
And they've got the perfect fusion, don't they? Is their attractive footy is winning footy.
I watched them play closely on Anzac night, and I was blown away. That second half is as good as footy as I've seen against the Lions. I want to talk about them later, Jerry, because he's right. They are entertaining to watch. They are so much fun.
Sam Mitchell told us on Monday night that some players asked to be coached harder. So what looks jarring from the outside is specifically what they are working on internally. And you have to pick your poison. It's not for everyone. So Scrimshaw is a player who has asked to be coached hard, and he responds to it. So again, what's interpreted on the outside, that's actually what Scrimshaw wants, needs, and thrives on, and responds to. Did you live that?
Yeah, for sure. And I think the art of coaching is to ensure that you know the individuals that you're working with. So your squad is 40, 50 deep. You have to have the ability to be able to know where you can go to with players in the heat of the moment, but also to in review. And obviously when you drop players, some of those conversations can be quite delicate. But in the spur of the moment, in the heat of the game, you can't go after the kids. I think it's an error across AFL or community level. If you go after the younger players, you're not going to get a response. You're not going to get that immediate improvement in performance. So I think most coaches know that you can go after the leaders or senior players. And, I coach Baldwin in the Eastern Footy League. We've got some senior boys who I know that I can rattle their cage a bit at halftime, three-quarter time, and get a response from. And the whole group will respond if I go after those boys. And they know that. Had it at Geelong. I coached the forwards for 1 year. I mostly coached the defenders, who I knew very closely, but I always tell the story, and these boys won't mind me saying this, but Steve Johnson from Geelong, such a great player. He liked to be coached hard. He would respond to little digs of you know, you're playing really poorly, you need to lift, you know, the team needs you, you're playing below what you're capable of, and he would respond to that. Whereas like a Tom Hawkins, who's going to go down as the most games played in the history of the Cats, one of the superstars, any sort of negative feedback in game would sink him. It wouldn't allow him to rise to the occasion. So I just knew that in those moments too, you know, a pat on the shoulder, a look in the eye, the positive reinforcement would help him. Personally, myself, even when I played, I didn't respond to the yelling and the abuse and, you know, a coach, calling you out in front of his peers. That's not what I was part of. But yeah, I think just getting that balance is really important. And even at community level, and I also coached my sons. Or last year, I coached my sons under eights, Hampton Rovers. I coached them hard. I did. I coached them hard, And the assistant coach is Steve Hooker, pole vaulter, gold medalist. This year we've swapped roles. So he's the senior coach and I'm the assistant coach. And he's so different to me, but in such a great way as well. He's super positive with the boys. And they're undefeated too. Like, so now they're the under-8s become the under-9s. Two different coaching styles can work.
Yep.
You know, you can actually have a blend of both. So, but yes, it's spot on. The balance of knowing who responds and knowing who doesn't, that's part of management and the art of coaching.
And the last one I was thinking of, how might you have approached the week in Chris Fagan's shoes?
Yeah, it's a tough one because they were so disappointing to watch. I just thought when they needed leadership, when they needed response from their A graders, their top tier players, it wasn't there. And I think Fags is a great coach. And obviously we know that they were 2 or 3 minutes away from winning a grand final last year, a premiership. And even his work, like he was at Hawthorn when they lost the 2012 grand final to the Swans. And they bounced back and obviously, you know, had success straight away, Hawthorn. So he's seen that and lived that, but they're not getting that at the moment, the Lions. I actually think he is trying to coach a different strategy. And I thought his way that he tried to coach against the Giants on the weekend, he tried to possess the ball, slow them down. Brisbane played really slow, kick and mark in the back half. That was a strategy. So he's trying something, but it didn't work. Is that his fault? Was it a poor decision to play that way? I think now what he's got to do is, and what we've seen with his press conferences and the way that he talks publicly is he loves this group. And if he will defend them despite the result. I think now what he's got to do, and this is just my opinion, but put a bit of ownership back on the players now. So I've tried these different levers to pull. We've tried a couple of different game styles that haven't worked. Get the senior boys in and let's discuss a strategy or a game plan that you guys want to play in that you think is going to give us the ultimate success. But they're just not defending well. They're not running hard. They've got too many players who are down in confidence and form. So I would shift it now back and make it right. I'm not going to coach you guys. We're going to coach ourselves. So have more player ownership. So hold them accountable for the decisions of how they want to play. So what the perfect opportunity this week is you guys set up your KPIs, what we're going to measure in game, and we'll hold you guys accountable for that. So I would push it back to the players this week now. He's backed them up after their latest loss. Let's see what the players deliver this week.
Nice. Brenton Sanderson with our strategy session. It's a round that so many of you are looking forward to. So Steve from Diamond Creek, the whole family will be at the G for Carlton Collingwood tomorrow night. The rivalry doesn't get any bigger. Give them hell, Pies. And Peter from Adelaide, I'm in Rhodes, Greece, holidaying with the family and have organised to watch the showdown at a sportsman's bar with my son. Thanks to the SEN app, I can keep up with what's happening in the AFL. Good on you, Pete. It's great to hear from you. Enjoy your holiday and enjoy the showdown at the Sportsman Bar in Greece. All right, we're going to spend our time on Carlton Collingwood, Giants Sydney and Melbourne Geelong. So the high-end encounters that will tell us so much in round 8. Melbourne's weather becoming sunny, a top of 17. United Energy's year-round vegetation inspection and cutting program is keeping communities safe.
I don't want us to settle that it was a good effort or it was close. It was unacceptable. And we've got to be better. So Geelong is currently top of the ladder, but we'd like to think we benchmark ourselves off our own standards, and we fell below those tonight on defending. So we've got to be better.
Michael Voss, we've got to be better. Now, the next opportunity is tomorrow night, and what an environment with Collingwood as their opponent. We turn our strategic minds with Brenton Sanderson to this game. Our McCafe coffee catch-up by any McCafe coffee on the My Maccas app for a chance to win free coffee for a year. Righto, Sando. Let's go on the Blues.
Well, the Blues, and Vossi's right, defensively the last 5 weeks, they're getting scored against. It's a bit of a concern. And they have got some injuries, which is testing their depth in their back half. But this is team defence. They've given up some big scores, so 118 points against Geelong. They gave up 98 points against the Giants, but they won, so they scored 100. They gave up 100 against the Crows, even 81 against the Kangaroos. So Vossi's spot on. We know that that's the cornerstone of what he sees as their strength, even though we know they're such a good stoppage side. They're the best in the AFL at scoring from stoppage. They average 52 points per game in scoring from stoppage. they actually do score. As much as Vossi's talking about their poor defensively, they're top six for scoring from turnover, 52 points per game. They've just got to get more turnovers. So that's his concern, is they're getting in transition games. The ball's going up and down the ground like basketball too often. They've got to ensure they get the game back in a contest. So their strength, I'll say it again, they must get the game in a stoppage battle, because we know they're so effective at scoring from stoppage. So as I said, they're giving up big scores. But the benefit or the positive is they're still scoring heavily themselves. So the offense is fine, but just create more turnovers. Don't get in a transition game. Make sure the game stays in a front half. So creating more turnovers is the simple message for Vossi this week from a Blues point of view.
All right, we're on standby to see whether McGovern and Chera are going to be back for that as well. Collingwood's side of things on an injury front was bad yesterday, as Degoe, osteitis pubis, re-entered the conversation, and Mitchell's going to miss as well. What sort of worries are you harbouring on Collingwood right
now? Yeah,
well,
this is the concern now. So if Carlton is so good at stoppage, how do Collingwood measure up? And their stoppage differential is really poor at the moment. So in the Anzac Day clash, which we loved, the Bombers had 17 more clearances. Okay, so this is a problem for Collingwood. And Jared, you and I have even spoken about it. I don't think the raw number now, like clearance differential and clearances, is probably no longer the priority for clubs internally. It's what happens post stoppage. So the contest post stoppage win or loss is the big one. So we know that Geelong, for example, they're a poor stoppage team at the moment, but even though they lose stoppage, they're winning the next contest, and they're actually gaining metres by losing stoppage, winning the next contest defensively and then going forward. It's a dangerous game to play, I think, for Collingwood though. So we know that they need to get back to their stoppage best. They're not taking marks at the moment. They've got a minus 16 mark differential in the last five games. So they're unable to control the tempo of the game with their offence, which is a concern. But the major one for me, I just think the opposition's getting too much of the ball at the moment for Collingwood. So when you watch them play, they're not controlling the game in their front half like they should be. And you mentioned it, Jared. I just think Degoe's a massive out too. He's their front half player. He's so good around contest. He hits the scoreboard. I just don't think they've got the player to fill that void for them. So for me, if I'm Carlton, to beat Collingwood, prevent mark chains, keep the game in the front half, keep dialing up pressure and taking the game on. It just feels like at the moment, to beat Collingwood, you must take the game on in offence and don't let them have the ball in the back half and go the full length and score. It feels like I've talked really negatively about Collingwood then. What I do love though, they're back to their best around pressure. So they're top five in the last five rounds. So the pressure factor is back for them. But we do know when these two clubs play each other, sometimes regardless of where they sit on form and where they sit on the ladder, that you're going to get a classic contest around energy and excitement. The crowd's going to be right behind this game. But I think it's pretty clear Collingwood have got to find a way to get on top around contest and clearance and prevent Carlton from going coast to coast. That's for me going to be the big deciding factor in this game.
All right. So when you mash it up, what are you thinking?
Oh, Pies fans, look away now, because I think I've got the Blues. Even, you know, despite the injuries, despite them giving up big scores, I just think the Blues will have the edge around contest with Degoe out. And how do they respond after that classic Anzac Day game, the draw? We know they're a great side, last year's premiers, but I'm just going to give the edge to the Blues in this one.
All right, so a huge crowd will be in place tomorrow night. If you're going, pack your earbuds. SEN Stadium is working a treat now. So at every game, and particularly at the MCG, where we heard from so many of you during Anzac Day and during the Saturday game featuring Carlton and Geelong as well. And if you love the Blues, Blues Radio is back Friday night for the biggest rivalry. Andy Marr will be joined by Carlton legends Cooter and Ange. What a lineup. They'll be calling all the action when the Blues take on the Pies. Tune in on SEN Fanatic, DAB Plus, and the SEN app. Blues Radio, thanks to Bupa, proud member partner of the Baggers. We'll go to the Sydney Derby with Brenton Sanderson after Nathan in the newsroom. Nathan, thank you. Saturday, it's 2 versus 3. We know across the border they're boasting about the grand final preview. They are super exciting, the Giants and the Swans. Brenton Sanderson and their offences are humming.
Yeah, and this is the two best offences in the competition at the moment. But combine that also, Swans have the second best defence and the Giants aren't too far away. They're ranked 6th defensively, but I think these are the two most exciting teams to watch at the moment. I think these are the two fastest teams when you talk about leg speed and speed of ball. And we thought the way that Collingwood played last year had gone to a new level with the speed they put on the game, both running speed and power running combined with the speed that the ball would get from the back half to the front half and ultimately score. I think these two teams have taken it to another level. I saw the Giants, what they did to Brisbane on Anzac Day, that night, and I was just blown away with how great they were, particularly in the second half. They made a good Lions team look really, really poor. The worst thing you can say about a team, and I actually said it as well, is that it looks like the opposition are witches' hats when they're defending. But that was the Giants. The Giants were so fast. The way that they put speed on the game was just unbelievable. So, yeah, there's so much to like about both of these teams. I'll start with the Swans. So if I start with the Swans, they're outscoring their opposition by 6 goals on average in the last 5 weeks. So they're putting up big scores. They've scored 100 points or more 4 out of the last 5 weeks. But combine that with great defence as well. They're the second best offence in the AFL, but they're also scoring from turnover. And most coaches will say our best defence leads to our best offence. And that's what we're seeing, I think, from the Swans at the moment. They're controlling the game with their mark game. They're taking what the opposition shows them. And I think the significant improvement we've seen from last year is they're faster and they're scoring 41 points per game on the back of stoppage. That's still without Mills and Parker.
Yep.
So it's only going to get better, you'd think, for the Swans. So at the moment, it's Heaney, Goulden, Warner, Blakey, Florent, Rowbottom. They're all kids. They're all players in their early 20s. It is breathtaking to watch them play at the moment. I also like that kid, Matt Roberts. I didn't know much about him leading in this year. He's been really important as well. The scary thing is, Jared, I still think they've got some improvement left in them too.
So you've got an idea what they're missing?
Well, as crazy as it sounds, because they're really quite good from stoppage and clearance. They've just got to win more clearances. Their numbers aren't great. When they win clearance, they score. So they're the third best team in the competition at scoring from clearances, 41 points per game. They just don't win enough. So that's, for me, the exciting part. If you're a Swans fan, is this is going to get better, because if they can tidy up that, if they can look for ways to win more stoppages, win more clearances, they're going to be even more dangerous. So I talked about the Cats before and about their profile, about they score from the back half and they look to, it doesn't worry them if they lose clearance because they're so effective at going from the back half. Very similar with the Swans at the moment. Their profile, Swans and Cats, are quite similar. But if the Swans get contest and clearance right, this is a scary, scary good team. But yeah, this is their biggest test, coming up against the Giants, who are red hot at the moment. It's going to be great on Saturday night.
All right, shake down the Giants for us.
Toby Green returns, Coniglio returns, and Taylor returns. Three really important players for them.
Good ends,
aren't they? Arguably their best forward, Toby Green, their best defender in Taylor. And you throw Coniglio, who's coming off two really good seasons. So once again, I still think their best is to come. And it's dangerous. I don't want to say it's early, it's round 8, but I fell in love with them watching them on Anzac Day. I just thought they were breathtaking to watch. Whitfield, Kelly, and then the big bodies of Ward and Tom Green in the midfield. But they are fast. They run. And I know the media, we sort of termed them the orange tsunami last year. When you watch it is just this band of players that just run fast and hard towards goal. You know, Callahan, Thomas, Bedford, the first gamer, Jones, number 2, wears a helmet. He's only tiny, 178 centimetres. He is super quick. You wait to see him play. He's awesome. Ash off halfback. So yeah, this is a really good team. And even, you know, Buckley and Iden stood up without Taylor. Himmelberg had a really good game last Thursday night. So yeah, they handball the ball through the corridor. They take you on with their leg speed. But yeah, if I'm the Swans, and I'm jumping ahead here, Jerry. The question is, well, how do you beat them?
Yep.
I just think you've got to meet them face on. So when the orange tsunami is coming at you, the wave of orange is running at you, you've got to meet it face on. You've got to put the game in a contest. So repeat stoppages, you've got to win inside. So the Swans, I talked about them winning clearance this week. You must win inside, but you've got to own the outside. So you need both. You need to have that strength and those hard bodies inside, but you've got to control the outside, because as soon as it flips outside against the Giants, look out, because they are running fast. So you just can't get them into a kick and run game. You've got to meet them face on. And, you know, I talked about Fags before and his strategy trying to play against them last week. Brisbane tried to deny them the ball, a little bit like soccer, where they can't embarrass you with their run if you don't give them the ball. But unfortunately, I just thought they played too slow in their back half, the Lions, last week. And then they made these fundamental skill errors in their back half, costly turnovers. I just don't think Brisbane played their natural game last week. And I guess the last part of the jigsaw is you've got to have the fitness to outwork them for four quarters. Now, I think the Swans might have that.
Okay.
So they might be able to meet them with that sort of face-to-face, contest-to-contest, who can run harder for longer. But have the Swans got the skill level and the patience to deny them the footy, which was what Brisbane couldn't do last week? So I don't mind the strategy from Brisbane and Fags last week. They just couldn't execute it. So I think the template is there to beat the Giants. It's whether the Swans can execute it for four quarters.
Did you have anything that the Giants must do on your list there?
Well, the Giants against the Swans is I think the important part for them is Tom Green in the midfield. If I'm the Swans, you've got to try and lock him down and prevent him from winning clearances. I think he had 12 or 13 clearances last week. But I still think with the Giants, if you beat them, it's by denying them the ball. So if they can prevent mark chains there, they average, I think, 100 marks per game, the Giants. The Swans restrict teams to 82. So if the Giants can get a kick and mark game going combined with their run, they'll go a long way to beating the Swans. But there's not much I don't like about the Giants at the moment. And also, too, imagine having that young Swans team at your disposal. They're going to have some fun, Swans fans, over the next few years. If that young team continues to develop and evolve, they've got more options inside forward 50 now. I know Buddy's a massive loss, but it might have helped them with him retiring last year, because now they've got multiple options. They're not so predictable when they go forward. They're finding multiple targets. They've got a great spread of goal kickers. So, yeah, this game is mouthwatering. This is must watch on the weekend. This is going to be a great game.
It's a great Saturday afternoon in store at the SCG. Now, I mentioned we were on standby out of Carlton. So Michael Voss is saying Adam Cherrill will return for Friday night. So the Blues add to their midfield while Collingwood lose a couple. But Mitch McGovern is not ready. So he's a chance for the following week, but he's not ready to return in defence. So that's how it's landing at the Blues. Righto to Saturday night next, when it's Melbourne and Geelong, a test of credentials. The two highest placed Victorian teams will go at it. We'll get Brenton Sanderson to run his strategic eye across that next.
From our perspective, we're not setting the game up to say, let's have the ball live in our back half and when we can get it through, we'll score. But I think that's how a few of our games have panned out a little bit. It's not necessarily by design. We're certainly not setting up to start our forward forays from the back half. But the key for us is making sure, well, if that happens, that we don't get scored against every time. And I thought the way we held up against their inside 50 dominance was really solid.
Chris Scott, in the aftermath of the Cats win over the Blues, they're unbeaten on the top of the table, the fourth place team, Melbourne. So this weekend, 1v4 and 2v3, it couldn't be more perfect. Did that pique your strategic interest? It did Bucks's interest, that grab.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? And they are so good at the moment at preventing the opposition from scoring in the back half, and Cats are scoring from the back half. So for the basketball fans, what it looks like is the Cats are going fast. They're going coast to coast, but then they're playing like a full court press when the opposition throw it back in. So yeah, they are so efficient and so effective at the moment. They're top four in both offense and defense. They're really poor at stoppage, Geelong. We've mentioned that. So the raw clearance number, but they're still scoring so well from stoppage. So a little bit like the Swans, if they can just win more stoppages, you think that that will reflect on the scoreboard as well. But they're the best team in the AFL at the moment, Jared, at scoring from turnover, the Cats. They're doing it so well. And that can be their defence is just so well settled. And even without Tom Stewart, they just look really good down back. They're getting a really good, even contribution from players in role. Their midfield is playing really well. And it's their small forwards too, which I just love watching play. Myers, Stengel, Close. They're just so important to the way that the Cats play. And, of course, you throw in then Cameron and Hawkins, who are two superstar veterans who are having some pretty good seasons as well.
What are Melbourne doing well?
Well, Melbourne at the moment, we know that it's almost their strategy is all in defence. But I just have a question around at what cost. So they're playing a back half game, which is dangerous. I mean, that's where they've got so much talent in their back half. And we know that May and Lever, they're just waiting for you to kick the ball to them almost. So sides get inside 50s against Melbourne, but they're defensively so well set up. Their midfielders get back so well. I just think that back half game, when I said defence, but at what cost, is whenever Melbourne win the ball, it feels like their forwards are not reset to kick the ball to. So that means they're forced to go wide and slow and possess the ball until their forwards reset. So that's why they're taking so many marks in their game at the moment, Melbourne, because when they win the ball in their back half, they've actually got nowhere to go forward. They actually have to share it around and wait for the ground to reset with their forwards. So that's the problem for me. They're not getting enough inside 50s at the moment. They're ranked 16th in the competition at inside 50s. They only had 50 against Richmond in the game they won last Wednesday night. Richmond had 50 as well. But I like what they're doing. The things I like about Melbourne is their top-end talent is elite. Gawn, Oliver, Petraka, Viney, May and Lever. And they're combining that now. It's almost like they're replenishing their squad while they've got all these top-tier players in. So names like Woden, Van Rooyen, Chandler, Windsor, McVee, Howes. We saw Turner kick 3 goals last week. So I like what they're doing. To be fourth on the ladder and having all these young kids coming in, they're doing a lot of things right, but there's still areas of improvement. They're only taking 11 marks on average in their forward line. That's in the bottom third of the competition. So we keep saying about their connection inside forward 50. That's the element to improve. Cozzy Pickett back makes a massive difference. His forward pressure, he keeps the game in your half. My only concern, though, for Melbourne at the moment, despite lots of positives, is they're asking so much of their defenders. They're relying so much on their defenders. I think the Cats can get them if they do a couple of little strategies.
Okay, so you've got a couple of checklists. So first, how do you beat Melbourne?
To beat Melbourne, you need quality inside 50s. And we talked about this all last year as well, Jared. It's not the volume or the quantity, it's the quality of inside 50s. You can't bomb it to the top of the square. It's what Richmond did last week. They kept dropping it 10 metres out from goal. May and Lever are simply waiting there for you to do that. So you need running shots. You need to kick running shots from 50 metres. You need to have set shots from 40 metres plus. So it's those little short 10, 12, 15 metre kicks that are really low to make their defenders defend. So you need to work the ball to a spot where you're going to have to kick long goals. And two other things we saw last week from Adam Uze that ultimately they didn't win the game. But we know now the template. You must equalise with Gawn. Wherever Max goes, you need a big, strong ruckman with him. And I think you need to tag Petraka.
Yeah.
We've seen a template now. So I expect Geelong to do that in the game this weekend.
How do you beat Geelong?
You've got to make the game even numbers. And Chris Scott is having a great year in the coach's box. As I said, they're not winning stoppage, but they're hurting you. Even when they lose stoppage Geelong, they punish you going back the other way because they're winning that next contest defensively. So you've just got to make them defend. You've got to make the game, wherever there's a Geelong player, you need a Melbourne player. You've got to make this an even number contest everywhere. So if the Cats drop a wing back to make 7, I would cross wings and equalise with that. If they drop a player back from the wing in general play, equalise with that. Make it 7v7 in your forward line. But the key is, what do you do with Cameron? And that's the big question, because you need a running player up the ground with him, and then you need an aerial player inside defensive 50. Most clubs don't have that. And I remember the experience I had when I was at Adelaide. Like when you played on Buddy Franklin or played against Buddy Franklin, you needed Ben Rutten on him inside 50, but you needed Brent Riley or Andy Otten on him up the ground. Yep. So can Melbourne have a player that, like a May or a Lever, that take him inside forward 50? You know, maybe drop Petty back this week to defence, McDonald potentially inside 50, but you need a run with player up the ground, a good runner, because you can't have one player play on Cameron. You've almost got to have that handover. You know, the way that Cats use Matty Scarlett, where he would just always stay as an anchor defender, and then you'd have like a Taylor or a Mackey up the ground run with like a Nick Riewoldt type player who's got really good legs. So yeah, getting that matchup right with Cameron could help decide this game as well.
Got a leaning?
I've got the Cats. Melbourne were better in the second half last week, but I just think they're playing a dangerous game at the moment. As much as they're winning and their position on the ladder, they're defending really well. I just think the Cats have got too many players playing in role that's going to overcome them on the weekend.
And were you leaning to the Giants in the Swans game?
Yep.
Yep. Okay. Oh, I've got this to send you out with. I was a player at Adelaide when the Monfries bounce showdown happened, and I can still remember your face, Sando, when you walked into the locker room and the cook you gave a few of the lads post-game and in the team meeting Monday was an all-time classic. I loved it.
Oh, God.
Very nice. Yes, we'll keep that anonymous. Sando, fantastic. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Stuart.
Right, Brenton Sanderson with our strategy session ahead of round 8.